welcome to Saturday Morning Cartoons, the Collateral Weekly podcast for all things animation, including reviews and interviews, coming to you from an overactive four-year-old's imagination called Bobby's Land. I'll be your co-host, Sean Paul Ellis, and joining me from Gigali, presumably Minnesota, my special co-host, Tony Lazzaroni. Tony, how you doing, bud?
Oh, yeah, don't you know? I like how your voice just completely switched from like a Minnesotan accent to straight up New York, Brooklyn like that.
Yep.
that was a hoot.
Yeah. Accent work for anybody who's listened to this show for the over 300 episodes knows that I'm inconsistent in terms of keeping some of these accents.
I love bad accents. That is one of my favorite things to dig into.
Welcome back, Tony.
It is a pleasure to be here.
Yes, absolutely. Well, we're super glad that you could be here because we are talking about Bobby's World.
Yes.
A lot of times I feel like this is the cartoon when we talk to friends, when we talk to people, other cartoon aficionados, and we say we do a cartoon podcast, they always say, have you reviewed Bobby's World yet? And you know, I mean, look, realistically, we're almost 300 episodes in and we're just knocking it out of the park, you know? We're getting around to it finally.
You say, and many others, I have been on this since I lived in DC, which is like right. 3 years ago. I've been on you guys about doing this one because it seemed like such a low-hanging fruit. Like, it was up there with all the Fox Kids ones that you ran through in a short run, at least for me. That's the other thing. I don't even know if it was originally a Fox Kids production, but it played with those in my market.
From my understanding, it had always been a Fox Kids product.
Okay.
You know, and I mean, for all seven seasons that this show ran,
I know, right?
I believe that this was always a Fox product. It's also very interesting to note this cartoon went past the cartoon syndication mark because there were 81 episodes mm-hmm. that they had that were included. But think about this, 81 episodes over seven seasons of that cartoon. Those are some shorter seasons.
Yeah.
In terms of what we might be used to. So it's interesting to kind of see that they hit that. Not only did they hit that mark,
yeah.
but that it was chopped up over so many different seasons like that as
right.
well. So
well, and nowadays, I mean, I feel like cartoons are kind of the Wild West just because of digital distribution and everything. I mean, was Adventure Brothers took like 12 years to do six seasons or something, you know? So they'll kind of just break these up however they need to now, and some are different lengths. Rick and Morty kind of did the same thing. They bounced around on length of seasons each time, and yeah,
right. You know, you have different cartoons like right now. Recently, season 3 of Kipo, Age of Wonder Beasts, just mm-hmm. came out on Netflix. They did 3 seasons in a year from DreamWorks. They were all digitally released, you know, onto Netflix. It's crazy how this happens now.
It was pretty quick turnaround for Voltron too, wasn't it? When they ran
it was,
through that?
I think seven seasons over like 2.5 years.
Yeah, they tore through that series, and it was great because I mean there was always like another one coming, which is not the thing you're used to with animation that usually takes forever for something to get produced. To turn it around that fast was incredible.
Yeah. Even She-Ra yeah. again from DreamWorks.
Yeah.
You know, just tearing through season after season after season.
They got Shrek workflow.
Yeah.
Coming this summer, yeah, Shrek 47 and a half.
Yeah. Oh, man. So, Bobby's World.
Yes.
You've been asking about this since you've been in DC, no longer in DC. What special place did this hold for you, Tony?
So for me, this show, I'll go ahead and say it. This was not by any means my favorite cartoon show. I think I do enjoy the intro to it the best of most cartoon shows. Just like very, very fun kind of chasing scene. But for me, this always played in the order when I was in. I grew up in southern Minnesota. That this played on Fox Kids, and it was this, then X-Men. And then the kid programming and it went to Seinfeld. And so that was the run of three shows. Like right when I got home from school, I would catch like the end of Bobby's World and then all of X-Men and then, you know, start watching it in Seinfeld, which at first I didn't care for and then eventually grew to love. But right. But I felt like it was kind of like it's as if somebody grew up in an hour and a half. from like small child that could appreciate Bobby's World to like early teen that was deep into X-Men to like young adult who was like Seinfeld is the greatest thing ever. Like it was just it was a rapid growth chain. And so you could just watch this block and pretty much it worked for everyone at some point along the path. But no, Bobby's World was one of those that I enjoy it in part because of more or less the mom's Minnesota accent is just aggressive in the most wonderful way. And there were a few of those. I mean, that's the mom's voice from Stuart from Mad TV. And so many the Animaniacs did it a few times where it was a Minnesota mom. Like it was kind of a trope that they ran with, but this one was like aggressively in that department.
And I feel like that Midwest mom accent is something that living on the East Coast, you know, you really didn't hear.
Yeah.
You know, it really wasn't present. We had growing up in central Pennsylvania, we had terrible dialects anyway. And hearing something like
this.
Would
you care to recreate one for us? I think I would enjoy that right now.
I'm not going it's not necessarily a dialect as it is sometimes. So I went to school in Pittsburgh and that's where Dave and I met. And they have like a word that they'll use for like a grouping of people. And they'll say yinz, Y-I-N-Z. Like yinz want to go do this. Central Pennsylvania, I remember distinctly had the worst version that I've ever heard, which was like Ewins. It was like Ewins want to go do this, and you're like, I don't know what you just said. And there would be like pockets of friends and parents that would say that word, and I always have to ask. And it was I had family growing up that lived on Cape Cod as well, and they would say wicked for everything. And I had to finally at one point break it down and say, what are we qualifying? Because everything is wicked. So therefore nothing is wicked. It doesn't make any sense. And then you realize that I was in the 90s and I was probably saying really and cool and rad before everything else. So it's just different regional qualifiers for everything. So
I remember when I moved to North Carolina from Minnesota. So I went to high school in North Carolina, but moved down there, and this one kid just really excitedly came up to me. He's like, do you say wicked? I'm like, what? No. And he was so depressed. This person from up north did not say wicked.
I'm going to be honest with you, Tony. I can't believe you don't say wicked. And you and I talk about the musical Wicked all the time.
We do.
And you refer to it as that Wizard of Oz musical.
Yeah.
And it really throws me for a loop because I'm like, I got him. I got him so close to saying it.
That Whacked musical, is that the one you're referring to? Whack it.
Just defying gravity with this one right now. Just killing me. Oh, man. I watched Bobby's World growing up as well. This was like a big part of my youth. I could not be more excited to get into this with you. Quick question.
Yes.
Before we really get into the nuts and bolts of Bobby's World. Tony Lazzaroni.
Yes, sir.
Sean Paul Ellis. Has your name ever been mispronounced?
Oh, good God, yes.
I say this because I want to throw the context out there for everybody that our main character, the Howie Mandel as a child character, his name is Bobby... I'm going to screw it up.
Generic.
Bobby Generic. Wow. You know, because you look at it and it really is.
You were ready before the show. You said it before the show perfectly.
Buddy, I know. I'm just... Consummate professionalism is what I want to say. So looking at Bobby Generic, always referred to in the show as Generic, and he has to correct everybody in terms of the pronunciation. Has Tony Lazzaroni ever been mispronounced as well?
I mean, I don't know that there is a correct way to pronounce it based on what I learned growing up from people trying to. I have a name that rhymes. It does not get simpler than Tony Lazzaroni. I'm sorry. It's very, very simple to say. But I would get people would throw in different vowel sounds in there that weren't there. Lazzarini, Lazzaroni. Like they would just kind of make shit up there. I had a junior high football coach that just didn't even try. He would just yell pastas at me when he wanted me to come over to like like, Mostaccioli, get over here. Lasagna, where are you at? Angel hair, coach, you're not even trying.
Please. Tony Rigatoni, get over here.
That's exactly it.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I've had every variation. I also love, still to this day, the people that come up to me, do you realize your last name rhymes with pepperoni? What?
It does? No way.
Oh my God. I got to call my dad.
Hi, Dad Pepperoni.
Did you realize this?
Papa Pep.
You didn't? How did neither of us learn this before now? Our name rhymes with an Italian food. No way.
Oh my God.
Yes. So I've had my name mispronounced many different ways, but it's never been so specifically common the same way. And I have to assume this is from Howie Mandel was like Mandel probably every time. Yeah. And he had to, it's Mandel. Like I'm sure that's where the joke comes from, that he just felt like he always had to correct it, everyone. And it's just, what is it doing that little
verse? Oh, boy. There we go. Here we go. Bobby's voice is here. We're going to dig into it in a minute. I will say, you know, it's very funny because I have the non-phonetic way of spelling Sean. So S-E-A-N. Mm-hmm. My name has been mispronounced maybe like three or four different ways. And the best part is that when I was dating my now wife in front of the show, Melanie Harker, and we were out somewhere, I was explaining to her that my name gets mispronounced all the time, that I will write it out for people and I'll get C-Ann or Seen nonstop. And I get it. It's you know, it's the Irish way, despite the fact that I'm not Irish. So it's joke's on me.
Says the redhead.
And it should,
Says
the redhead. But I mentioned this to her that it had been mispronounced, and she looked at me and was like, I don't believe you for a second. And we were waiting for a reservation to like go sit down at a restaurant, and somebody held up like a waiter's list and was like, Seen Ellis? And I just looked at her with the biggest I told you so eyes. It was perfect placement in terms of what I wanted.
I don't Plus, know how people don't
I gave that,
that
host I gave that host $10 to say it to. No,
perfect. That's how you feel seen.
That's how I feel secure. I did not do that. She really did mispronounce my name, but whatever.
Yeah,
doesn't matter.
You don't have to pay for stupidity. You can find it for free in plentiful amounts around the country.
Exactly. Well, speaking of somebody who is the opposite of stupid, because he is the absolute best. If you don't know anything about Bobby's world, we are going to toss this over to our very own Bobby.
Ooh.
Bobby Anthem, best friend of the show, for this week's Bobby's World synopsis. So, Bobby, take it away.
Bobby's World follows the daily life of Bobby Jenerick and shows how he sees the world through his very overactive imagination. In Nightmare on Bobby Street, Bobby watches a scary movie at the drive-in theater and has nightmares. Uncle Ted tries to help. In The Night of the Living Pumpkin, it's Halloween and Bobby is too little to go trick-or-treating. So Uncle Ted helps Bobby turn the house into a house of horror. The trick-or-treaters have to pay money to Ted and give candy to Bobby to go inside, much to Derek's dismay.
We always ask this question, and we have to ask it now.
Yes.
Who would we cast Bobby as in Bobby's World? And the answer is glaringly apparent. It's the easiest answer that we had. What would we name Bobby in Bobby's World? What character would he be, Tony?
Was it Uncle Ted?
Oh my God. I mean, yeah. Actually, you know, he would make a stellar Uncle Ted. He would make a stellar Uncle Ted. And I also want to subvert expectations with having Bobby Anthem's voice as Bobby, like the kid
that would be
in this as well. Perfect.
Just that That's amazingly deep voice.
Unbelievable.
For that tiny little kid.
Just a perfect voice for this perfect little baby angel child, 4-year-old that we get the pleasure to hang out with for this cartoon. Super easy. Well, we're going to get into our reviews and how we feel about Bobby's World right now. And for any new or longtime listeners, we're going to break it down into three categories. We're going to talk about the good, the bad, and the LOL. Does that sound like a spaghetti Western? Hoo-hoo, you bet your saddle, partner. That's 100% what it is. Clint Eastwood called us up and said, hey, guess what? I want you to start a cartoon podcast and adapt the exact close approximation to the name of a movie that I was in that's very famous. And we were like, done and done, Mr. Eastwood. And he's like, call me Clint. This bit's gone on way too long.
I'm just mostly concerned that you said spaghetti and I think you mispronounced my last name again. So
did you know that it rhymes with pepperoni?
No. Oh my God.
So we're going to break it down in these categories. So we're going to talk about the things that we like about the show, the things that didn't land for us within the show. And then we're going to talk about the things that made us laugh, whether it was intentional or unintentional within the context of this show. Because you were listening to this on Halloween, on October 31st, we have actually watched a spooky episode for this. We have watched, Night of the Living Pumpkin Perfect. Yeah. Plus, Tony and I have actually watched a couple other episodes along the same lines for Bobby's World as well. So we might throw or pepper in some of that additional insight and information and everything that we have into this episode as well. All of our review is really going to kind of center and be based off of this one single episode and some of the additional context that we have for the program, knowing full well that this is all built on a warm, soft, pillowy blanket of love and understanding and respect and hard work and also a ton of money that goes into this industry. And guess what? Yes. If you have a disagreement with what we say, please message us. Let us know. We'd love your recommendation for Bobby's World episodes because we will go back and we'll actually watch them. Mm-hmm. And then hopefully we'll come back on this program if you ask us nicely enough. Don't Twitter at us and get real flippant about it. I mean, we probably will actually go back and do a spite episode, if that's what it comes to. We're not above that. We are two catty guys talking about cartoons.
I think the spite episode is a wonderful idea because I've been doing this show for a while now, and I can think of some episodes that I have heard personally some spiteful thoughts about. We might have to revisit a spiteful episode, but we'll find out how this one goes first.
Yeah, we'll find out how this goes first. So, that understanding, let us know if you disagree with us. But all of this is in this warm compliment sandwich that we're going to be talking about today. Mm. So let's, of course, get into the good. Tony, what are your first impressions of Bobby's World?
So I think the first thing I noticed going back and watching it now that I don't necessarily have the context that I remember from being a kid is the pacing. This show is incredibly slow by modern day standards, but I think it's relatively fitting. And I'm trying to decide if that is a like Teletubbies angle to try and like simplify it for a younger audience that's not necessarily going to catch on to jokes and quick moving things as well, or if that was something that was geared towards maybe actually trying to work towards syndication. Because in order to be able to resell something in syndication, you have to edit it every few years, which means like change the length. And so if you leave like dog ears of extra space at the end of sequences and stuff like that, you can cut it down and change the length of each episode, call it a new edit, and then sell it as a new product. So maybe that somehow plays into it. But either way, like watching it back was very interesting to just kind of see how slow, like it's almost like they were designed for a laugh track that was not there. And I kind of love it because there were so many times where it just felt like Howie Mandel on stage just being like, and a joke.
There was definitely a lot of sort of cheekiness and pandering to you as the home viewer.
Yeah.
That happened in many instances. That was very funny. I did not expect that. And obviously, as a kid, when I would have been watching this, I don't remember that. So again, like it's very funny to think I would have watched this between when this originally ran. I would have been maybe 10, 11 years old until almost the time that I graduated high school.
Yeah.
Like that large span of time, Tony, I grew up with Bobby's World.
Is this post Ferris Bueller's Day Off? Because I do feel like some of the into camera stuff felt very Ferris Bueller's Day Off style. Just like treating the audience as like someone who's there and kind of just following along with all of this. And so I wonder if that's a homage to some degree, because there's definitely in that opening sequence there's an homage, I'm pretty sure, to The Shining, of him like riding down the hallway in that little tricycle. You know,
oh right,
it felt very Shining with the like the tracking shot directly behind the tricycle. It's perfectly in that boat, like rounding the corner and everything,
right? And Ferris, and this is post Ferris Bueller.
Okay.
Ferris Bueller came out in 86.
Okay, yeah.
So if this came out in 1990, there would have been plenty of time for that sort of sequence or that sort of maybe a niche to kind of land into mm-hmm. an animated series or product, because it would have been floating around the zeitgeist.
Yeah.
That whole idea, if you're not familiar with what Tony's talking about, is just sort of breaking the fourth wall, looking directly at the camera and just being like, I know you're watching this. Like, you're enjoying it, right?
Yeah, and it's yeah. it's a joke that's to the audience. It's like, and that's what he said. Like, it's something. It's just meant to be like wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Which now we've all gotten used to from like Deadpool and things like that. It's commonplace now. Deadpool and Fleabag, and you know, so many other shows that have used this to extremely strong effect. It's a good move when it's done well. But it was just interesting in this one because it does feel very Ferris Bueller to me. The way that it's utilized.
Oh man. You know, you brought up the whole idea of just the homage in the intro.
Mm-hmm.
The intro for me coming back into it this time was a source of joy for me. And just to kind of differentiate it, this is something where like when we're looking at this intro, it is dedicated animation.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's dedicated animation that is only for use in the actual intro song. It's fun visuals.
Mm.
It gives you the sense that there is that really imaginative aspect of this program in terms of how Bobby perceives the world. It also gives you an interesting use of scale in terms of how small Bobby is, because at the beginning of this show, he's only 4 years old. Mm. And I think by the time the show ends its run, he's only six. So sort of Simpsons logic in terms of what's going
right.
on.
Right.
But you kind of get an idea of exactly, you know, where, how adventurous he is, I'll say. Mm-hmm. Just how, you know, sort of fun he's going to have with his surroundings and everything that's there mm-hmm. in order to kind of make it insanely unique and interesting for him. Plus, you get a quick cast of characters that are kind of thrown in there in the mix mm-hmm. to sort of see how he interacts with them. No title cards, so you definitely are going to have to go if you don't remember everything from the show. You're going to have to go in Wikipedia and find all their names. No
yeah.
problem whatsoever. But there's, I want to say, like almost a childlike whimsy that mm. was super fun and engaging for this. How did you feel about it?
I love the soundtrack, and I meant to, I regret like not looking this up beforehand, but it makes me think of the Simpsons opening of just kind of this like lots of weird instrumentation and just kind of, it is very, very like early 90s TV theme. Because I want to say like Dinosaurs had a theme that was similar to this for me, and you know, so many other shows that, but it's synthesizers and like weird sound effects all kind of just merged together into this little symphony leading up to up to just the final of kind of his head and his floating head of like smile,
right.
But yeah, that was interesting. And actually, I want to make the distinction that we were talking about the theme song through all of this with the music and everything.
Right.
Not necessarily the cold opens, which in and of themselves are
yes.
kind of magically terrible. Which they are a live action Howie Mandel, green screened or probably blue screened at the time, wearing very 90s apparel, talking to an animated Bobby. And having a back and forth rapport that really was not the best timed thing as far as the animation structure goes, because there's sometimes where they're talking on top of one another, like they really did not plan out seemingly how these things were supposed to flow, and it's basically him talking to himself because he voices Bobby for the show. What? Sean just gave me a surprised face. It's like, what? My name rhymes with pepperoni?
Perfect. That's what I was going for. You beat me to it.
But yeah, so it's great to watch these two just try and bounce jokes off one another that don't land for anything. I think the one that I watched that was the dumbest was like Bobby comes on the screen, he's on his own, and he goes, sorry Howie couldn't be here today. But then he goes behind the wall and walks around the other side, and there's Howie Mandel, but he's over here. And then it's the like Howie's like, what, well, Bobby, I could be over here, and he walks over the other side. I'm like, no, that you got the joke. Don't why put a hat on a hat on a hat? This does not need to go any further. you hit the complete junk joke that you were going for. Just move on. Get on with your life.
It's
what did you think of these cold opens?
I love these cold opens. Now we have had live action cold opens before when we talked about Super Mario Super Show. They sort of set up that Italian plumber living in New York City kind of like loft vibe, mm-hmm. where you'd have Mario and Luigi and maybe another character kind of segue and introduce the cartoon. This, I think, is fun and unique in the sense, even similar to when we did Chuck Norris Karate Commandos, mm-hmm. where you really are only going to get it at the beginning of the episode, and that's it, which I think makes it successful because it's not something like some of these other cartoons where they're going to continue to bring you back to this live action segment. The live action segment really just kind of, as you mentioned, serves to kind of tell one joke poorly, mm-hmm. and then get into the cartoon and kind of what they're going to be talking about that day. I love these things. These are so awkward and cringeworthy. And I say this because I think it's historically important to note that Who Framed Roger Rabbit came out in 1988 mm. and was a unbelievable success in how to do human and cartoon on screen at the same time interaction. And this came out 2 years later.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, I'm not going to say for a Saturday morning cartoon that it needs to be of that same caliber. It's just so funny to see the contrast because that's immediately what snaps into mind mm. because you think of the comedy from Who Framed Roger Rabbit, the comedy of Howie Mandel in the 80s and the 90s, you know, as his career was like just really doing unbelievably well and he was kind of all over the place.
Right.
Especially for us watching this as kids as a cartoon, we're like, oh yeah, I know that's Howie Mandel. You know, mm-hmm. parents would probably be like, who is that? We don't know maybe your parents had caught him on like a late night show or something like that, or like a comedy special or something. But you know,
looks vaguely the guy that played Balky or Paul Reiser or something.
Yeah. I mean, he's got like the perfect vibe where you're just like, I expect to see you on a TGI Fridays, like, or a TGIF Fridays, like where you'd be like on a family sitcom or something like that. I think he's that fun of an actor. And he definitely has that either dad or fun uncle that lives with you vibe. And that's great. I enjoy that.
Or because you just stumbled onto this perfectly, a TGI Fridays employee with all the flair. That's pretty well perfect. I could see that for him in that era.
Yeah. You know, let's just say it. Fashion from the 80s and 90s was really just a lot of buttons and a lot of accoutrement.
Yeah.
We don't need it.
Yeah. Ill-fitting clothing. Yeah. It was magical in its own right. But yeah, you're right about the animation, like from Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Yeah, they showed how well it was done. And a couple years later with Space Jam, they showed that they could still do some of that like live action animation crossover and really show how to get the two to interact. Maybe it's the TV budget end of it, not having the full movie budget to do all those crazy effects. Yes. But in the same breath, it's like, do one or two, like show some level of chops in there in producing these, and don't just lean on really bad, like one-off jokes and try and lean into those. I was going to ask, because you and I did the Jackie Chan Adventures episode.
That's right.
Didn't they do these live action opens with them?
Oh, they sure did.
Yeah.
I definitely remember them doing them then.
Yep. And those were good. And I think the humor was better, which helps out a lot too.
Yeah. It's always hard too, because I want to illustrate for Night of the Living Pumpkin. This was the joke that they talked about was, you know, what kind of costume are you going to be wearing, Bobby? And his response is like, whatever costume my mom picks out, that's what I'm going to wear. And so Bobby reciprocates and asks, like, what costume are you going to wear? And Bob, and I say Bobby, but really Howie Mandel, like live action Howie, kind of goes down the idea. He's like, don't you hate it when like you have to wear last year's costume, but it's been in the closet, and so it's got fungus, and it's like a stinky costume, and like all you have to go outside, and all of your friends are like, hey, what's that smell? And you're like, it's me, I'm wearing a stinky costume. There was a part of me that was thinking, oh no, he's projecting. This is a real thing that happened to him at some point. Yeah. Also, if you wear a costume for one night, and I know this because there are hundreds of photos of me when I was a kid with like the 80s style costume that you would wear on Halloween, where it was basically a plastic bib mm-hmm. of a t-shirt that had the picture of the costume that you were supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And it said the name of the thing that you were supposed to be on top of it. And then it was just a crappy plastic mask that went over your face. I have so many photos of me in those costumes. Yeah. It was like, you're a Wuzzle. I'm like, obviously, don't you know who I am now? I'm the best Wuzzle there was. And it's so silly to see those things in terms of how they are. For this, you have to think it was a piece of garbage plastic that probably got thrown away at the end of the night because it yeah. cost $5.
Yeah.
Who is holding on to that stinky piece of plastic for a year only to then make their kid wear it? No offense if they are, but it's such a bizarre story that it felt like, oh no, we've gone into personal Howie Mandel territory.
Well, right and now. that's actually part of the show. If you watch the credits at the end, they'll actually say these based on stories from Howie Mandel's childhood. And I also, for the listening audience, I went to Harold Ramis Film School here in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And one of the guest instructors that we had come in was Jim Fisher, who happens to be one of the executive producers on Bobby's World. And when I found that out, you should have seen my face. I lit up like a Christmas tree. Like, this is amazing. I need to ask questions. And one of the things he talked about was what the writing sessions were like, which was really how he would come in, kind of tell a bunch of stories. We would kind of take notes. And then it was almost like an improv scene, like building an episode based out of bits and pieces of these stories kind of combined with our own childhood, which is a lot like almost any other writer's room that you might experience. The difference is it's very geared towards his childhood. Right. And so pulled straight from that. And so there's a lot of stories in here that I'm like, oh, that's definitely him. Kind of like the name thing, generic. Like it's very much something he experienced. And I feel like it was probably one of those things that he put in like the pilot episode, thought it was real funny. And the writers were like, yeah, it's great. Cool. And then they go to the second episode. He's like, so I want the generic joke like six more times in this episode. And they're like, ooh. Okay.
Howie.
Sure.
Howie, baby.
They get to season six. It's like he wants to put it three more times. Why? We've got the joke. The joke is dead. Stop killing it. The horse is dead, buried. Bones are showing. Like, let this thing die. It's done. Please.
Oh, no. We've been talking so much mm-hmm. about the Bobby character, Tony. What was your impression? What were your thoughts and feelings and memories about the Bobby character being this titular character?
It's very much you're in his head throughout the whole. I mean, this whole angle of it actually makes me think a lot of a PG Calvin, like Calvin and Hobbes Calvin.
Oh,
because yeah. it is this little kid in his own imaginary world where anything will send him off the deep end. The difference is when you read Calvin and Hobbes, you would come in the middle of his fantasy and then be dumped back out into reality. And Bobby's World is just this ebb and flow back and forth between what is really happening in the world and what is in his own imagination, sometimes to the point where you can't necessarily tell the difference between the two, or that they'll do some sort of tag joke where like you thought something was imaginary and then it was actually a real thing that kind of came true in that. I watched an episode that was about the Tooth Fairy coming to visit. And when he's laying in bed waiting for the Tooth Fairy to come in, the Sandman comes in on a surfboard and is like, what's the sister's name? I'm blanking on the sister's name. It's Derek and
Kelly. Derek and Kelly.
So he comes in and he goes, is this Kelly's room? I got a great joke about, or I got a great dream about her boyfriend for it. And he goes, oh, that's next room over. And it's actually, he like directs him to his brother's room. And then he gets up the next morning after having this imaginary sequence and shows him the dollar that he got from the Tooth Fairy. And the brother's like, oh man, all I got was a stupid dream about Jeff. Like, And so it just carries over into the real world. So they do a lot of this kind of bouncing back and forth between those. But it's and that's one of those things that also elicits the Ferris Bueller look, you know, break fourth wall into the camera where Bobby just goes, "Ooh." So, but I do think it's an effective character from the standpoint of telling a story from a child's perspective. You're drawn in by this imaginary world very much the same way that I felt like with Calvin and Hobbes. I think the only difference is that instead of having a stuffed slash, you know, live tiger that he's talking to that has these conversations, he's just doing it fourth wall style with you, the audience, throughout the entire series. But what do you think?
But, well, I mean, he's got that stuffed animal with him. You know, he's got Wembley with him. He's got Roger. Mm-hmm. He's got Uncle Ted.
Uncle Ted, who, do you want to dig into Uncle Ted?
In a moment.
I don't want to cyber.
Well, I do really like the Bobby character just in general. The shape and design of it. If you missed this, think of Stewie Griffin or from Family Guy. It's the original football-headed shaped kid, you know, that you would have. Bobby does a lot with wordplay that is unbelievably enjoyable for me because as I'm typically listening, and Tony, I don't know about you, but maybe it's part of the improv comedy training that we've had, but as I'm listening to people and they will say certain detailed words or certain specifics, my brain will continue listening, but another part of my brain will just be like, I want to see what that idea and that entirely different, new or fun thing looks like right now.
Yeah.
And I'll kind of go off in that little daydream for all of like a nanosecond and then snap back to reality where I'm still listening, but it's fun. Mm. And I feel like what this show does is allow that childlike imagination to really kind of like take form. And as well as you've mentioned, kind of really have that sort of nod to the, like breaking the fourth wall.
Yeah.
Plus, in this particular episode, we are given a lot in terms of Bobby and even at the very beginning of the episode, sort of gender roles where he is dressed as a princess and his mom just kind of reassures him and just says, don't you know, you're the most powerful princess in the world. And he loves it. Now he's upset because it's not the costume that he wants. And he changes the costumes many times sort of like throughout this whole ordeal of the evening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and eventually kind of into this pumpkin, which his entire family changes costumes multiple times in this single episode, which who's sitting around with just like these boxes of costumes? I say this and I should note that I've got boxes of costumes that are off to my right now. I am. This is really pod calling the kettle black on this. Yeah, I'm the worst offender.
You have stuff. I can vouch for Sean Paul Ellis has stuff. Many kinds of stuff. Just in the in the frame that I'm seeing now, just to see the shelf full of much stuff back behind you back there. Yes. I can believe that you have a few costumes. I'm willing to bet you have at least one of those like pressed plastic face mask costumes from when you were a kid somewhere in one of those tubs in your home.
I actually don't have one of those. Maybe my mom has one in her basement somewhere, but I don't know of one that is still remaining. I think it's just the photos at this point. Now, you did your Bobby impression for us a minute ago, but I wanted to ask you, do you know where and how Howie Mandel originally created the first, like where he created or what the impetus was for the Bobby voice?
I don't, but I will go ahead and make an outside guess based on his stand up at the time. He was doing the whole like stretch a latex glove over his head and inflate it like a balloon bit that he used to do on stage. There seems to be like a slightly medical angle on this. Potentially he was the child of a dentist. Maybe there was some sort of laughing gas or maybe like helium at some point in time. No, it doesn't necessarily play to dentist, but like maybe somehow that comes into play for it. But it's kind of those for us. It's like a childlike version of Meat Rod from Aqua Teen Hunger Force. It's the same. Yeah, it's just like the inverted, I don't even know how to describe it. Like it always feels like I'm like pushing my tongue towards the back of my palate to get it to do this kind of voice.
It's like a falsetto, but it's in the back of your throat.
And it's not particularly difficult to do. So it's one of those things I think everybody discovers at some point in time when they're like a kid, like, oh, I can do this for us.
I don't know what this happened.
Yeah. Mine just kind of drifts southern every time I do it because I have to run the rod. But but I'm curious. Did it involve somehow helium or some other gas?
So you were, no, it did not. But you were close in terms of the medical portion of this, because it actually was a voice that was created when he was choking on a piece of cake. I know.
I can
there's
see
a
that.
Part of me that there's a part of me that has to ask the question how and why. But it was something fun that he developed when you're choking, you know, as you do when you're choking.
When you're writing material while choking.
Oh yeah. I mean what kind of bullet time does he have where he can slow down and then just be like, I'm choking. Write a joke or a funny voice. You're like, don't do that. Just learn how to do the self-Heimlich. Look, as somebody, and I say this knowing full well that I have choked. I have accidentally, nobody does it on purpose, but I have choked several times myself where I've had to perform self-Heimlich. It is not pretty.
Yeah.
And it is very, very scary.
Yeah.
And at no point did I think, you know what? I'm going to do a friend voice right now. Like, I did not do that. Was never on the register. It was, oh my God, how did I almost die by eating a single goldfish cracker?
It's like, I could survive, you know, the plague, but a single goldfish cracker is going to be my downfall.
It's really going to put me down.
This is what 2021 holds for me.
Yeah. So you mentioned the mom character in the accent for you, and we've also mentioned Uncle Ted. There is a large cast of characters. Was there a favorite character that you had?
Outside of
Bobby.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think my favorite character outside of Bobby is Uncle Ted, because he does make me think a large amount of some sort of a cross between like an Uncle Buck type scenario.
Yep, 100%.
Mixed with touches of Rodney Dangerfield.
Yes.
Both in the outfits and just in kind of the mannerisms and kind of like sort of like wannabe swingerish type character that he's kind of running with. I see that kind of as a blend there. And then just gave him a look that makes me think like an animated version of John Goodman from Roseanne era. You know, that's kind of what puts together for Ted for me. And in the course of the episode we watched, we also got to see him do a wonderful Elvis Presley impression times over. So that was its own level of entertainment there. But he's just a great character because all he is there is to enable a 4-year-old. Like to just be able to amplify whatever the 4-year-old's goal is or what he would want to do. The thing the parents would tell him, no, you can't do that. Uncle Ted's the one to just roll in and be like, sure, let's go do that. And just be all over it. So I think he was probably my favorite. I would go slight second though for Kelly, just because of that accent that is like clueless on crack. It
oh
is
my God, it's
so
hard to listen to.
I don't understand how in one household you would have that mother's accent and that daughter's accent. Where in the country do you live that you could develop both of those two things together?
But I think weirdly the Kelly character was a byproduct of that time.
Yeah.
Of the whole like get real, you know, just mentality that you would have. I mean, plus she has a blonde mullet cut. And just, I mean, she looks tomboyish and punk rock at the same time and feminine,
mm-hmm.
which, hey, that's a hat trick that is awesome. And if you can pull it off and you can make it work or if you're just comfortable with it yourself, dynamite.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. Like, it's a cool thing to have, but it's weird because I think if anything in this show feels time capsule-ish, it's Howie Mandel's fashion in the cold open and Kelly.
Yeah. Kelly is trapped.
Weird. Anything else, I feel like it could be timeless.
Yeah.
Those two things feel like they're very distinct.
She makes me think Christina Applegate from
Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead.
No, I was actually going to say later for Married with Children.
Oh, that's
like
it.
Early on in Married with Children. That's what she felt like to me. Like it really felt like the two kids from Married with Children. Even Derek felt like the son from that one too. With far less depressing parents.
Now, if this had gone the way that you had watched it, where it was this, and then X-Men, the animated series, And then it would have been Married with Children on a Saturday afternoon. That would have been trippy.
Yeah.
But also, well, perfect.
So I want to take it back to this. I got to jump back to the intro thing. But you were talking about how Howie Mandel basically went into a stand-up bit. And I'm realizing that there was a tie in there with what Seinfeld does, opening every episode with a cold open with stand-up. And now I'm really wondering, what would it be like if X-Men started with a stand-up bit at the top?
Just Wolverine at an open mic. Just very uncomfortably, like with his claw tapping the mic, being like,
"You there, bub?"
Just in a gruff, gravelly voice. Just, "Hey, I wrote some things down on my notebook today." Be like, "Oh man, are these just jokes about him having unrequited love with Jean Grey?" Like, I get it. We got the punchline last week, buddy.
He's still just processing the fact that Morph is dead. That's
man, it's gonna happen in the pilot. You're gonna have several seasons to get over it and figure it out. Because guess what? Not dead. Yikes. I agree with you. I think the Uncle Ted character is fantastic. He's one of my favorite characters for all the reasons that you said. And in terms of Night of the Living Pumpkin, Bobby can't go out trick-or-treating on Halloween night. So Uncle Ted brings all the fun of a cardboard haunted house into the generic household. See, I'm gonna keep doing it. Brings it into the house. He creates this unbelievable maze of boxes. He has all these different things that are set up. There's spaghetti that's like the brain of a mummy. There's
ball that's a floating eye.
Yep. And then Kelly that's in like a charcoal mask and like hair extensions and curlers, and she's the witch. So there's all these fun things that are kind of playing into the nature of Bobby's imagination, and he's not scared of it. He's not scared of this in any way, shape, or form. Like, he's loving it. They're having fun. They raise all this money because the entry fee is $1 and 2 pieces of candy. Well, it's a scalable, adjustable economy that Bobby
seems to
introduce.
Depending on how much they like or dislike the child that's at the
door. Exactly. But I mean, they're winning over friends. They're winning over bullies. They're winning over all these people who keep coming back and doing this. And it's fun to continue to kind of see them play this same game over and over and over again, and then just kind of heighten it to the point where police are coming. They're setting up barricades. They've got like a velvet rope.
Yeah.
So they've got all these things that are kind of like getting completely blown out of proportion. And for me, you know, it was really fun suddenly when you see the parents off at their own party doing their own thing. You see Martha and you see Howard, and they're at their like this completely adult Halloween party, and then suddenly Uncle Ted just crashes into the door and he's like, "Oh gosh, I've come a little bit too far." And like, that's when you realize that this maze that he's created has gotten way out of hand in terms of what's happening. And that for me was super fun to see.
I just want to know where you get all those boxes from, because whenever I need to move, man, there are no boxes to be found anywhere. I feel like they're just getting used for Ted's maze someplace in Chicago. I cannot get the boxes that I need. But you know what? Some kids are having fun on Halloween. That's what really matters.
That's what matters.
I also want to know what charity this money was supposed to go to.
Yeah.
I don't think they ever addressed that in the episode. It's like, we're going to give it away to charity. It's like just the big C charity. Don't really know what it is.
I really feel like at some point with all the damage that they did the house, that the charity just became the house fund to repair and
fix everything. I think that's the punchline of the episode. But yes, yeah.
The punchline is take away from charity. Take money away from a charity. Yikes, Bobby, what are you doing?
Money for charity and then have to use all that money to pay off the things that you destroyed.
I want to begin to transition over into some of the bad things, but I wanted to ask you any final good moments about this particular episode or anything that you watched that you want to bring up?
I think that I do like this one. He gets a chance to win over his brother. Because Derek does kind of play the crappy older brother that was always perpetuated in TV and everything, whether or not you actually had that relationship with a sibling or not. But it was just there to just mess with Bobby and like mess with his head and give him grief. He brings him down the stairs dressed as himself and he goes, he's going as a dork. Like, it's like, just rags on him. And then later on in the episode, he wins him over with this like really cool like haunted maze, whatever it was, which also changes at one point in time. It just leaves the boxes and just becomes their house. They're just wandering around the house, you know. But even though it's their own place, like he's amazed by it and kind of wins him over. So I think that's the nice little heartwarming piece in this that kind of gets thrown away. It's they could build the episode around that if they really wanted to, but they didn't. They chose to just kind of keep it as like a C story in it. But I did like that piece.
Yeah, no, I agree. All right, so let's transition into some of the things that didn't hit for us. Oh man, you're closing your eyes and shaking your head, Tony. No bueno, not good. Not good in terms of what we're getting into. I will say for me, you know, kind of overall, it broke down into two areas. One was jokes not landing, and the other one was jank. And in the jank department, we had two subcategories, which were lip sync jank, which we see every once in a while, where the lips didn't necessarily match up with what the voice actor was actually saying happens. And then there was some jank animation that happened for me every once in a while. I think probably the noteworthy jank animation in this particular episode is after the spooky haunted house, you have Derek and Bobby and Uncle Ted on the couch, and they are sleeping and they're snoring. Mm-hmm. And the sound effect that you hear is just the snoring sound. But the actual visual portion of the animation is just two keyframes, which is like inhale, exhale, going back and forth.
Yeah.
And they just kind of flicker them like somebody on a light switch back and forth a couple times, not in rhythm with the breathing, just kind of to give the simulation that they are breathing, but man, it looks like a weird spastic jitter for a couple seconds. So some of that stuff was weird for me. What didn't land for you?
I wasn't going to necessarily give it that name, but the jank is definitely an issue for me. It also had to do with editing. There are times where I'm fairly certain that they probably rewrote jokes later to punch them up, but because it's animation, you can't just send back and get the mouths to line up. So they'll tend to use reaction shots and just put the voiceover over reactions. So you're looking at Bobby while you're hearing his mom speak, or you're looking at the mom while you're hearing Bobby speak. And that just lets them get away with kind of putting whatever they need to in wherever. But it's usually fairly obvious if you watch it, because they will use the same angle and shot and animation twice, or more within a sequence. So I do remember, I don't know if it was from this episode or another one, but there was a conversation between Bobby and his mom where it cut back and forth between the two, and you're hearing the other's voice through the whole conversation. And I'm like, either that didn't work and they replaced it with this piece, or somebody just completely dropped the ball on who was supposed to be, you know, the animatic got flipped around, or, you know, somebody dropped the cards to know that, oh, this person's supposed to be on camera here. Let's make the mouth move. Maybe they were just trying to keep for cheaper animation because, you know, a still non-moving character versus one matching mouth, much easier to deal with. But either way, that was kind of the jank that the non-landing jokes got a little rough for me. Like it's that. It feels like Teletubbies. It's not that they don't. It's not that they don't land. I just know exactly where they're going to land, and this show feels very much to me like the kind of comedy that a child would enjoy that grows up to like The Big Bang Theory. It's just that extremely telegraphed joke. Like I'm sure there are people out there that are like yelling at their you know, iPhone or whatever right now, like what are you talking about? Big Bang Theory is amazing. Sure. But it's one of those things you can see the joke coming from a mile away. And it's the setup, it's so much effort put into setting it up, and then the punchline hits and there should be a laugh track, and the show does not have a laugh track. They just leave that gap where supposedly the kid at home is just cackling with laughter even though the joke is nice.
I'll even say in the cold open, that's where it hit me for this episode, where they're talking about like, oh, is this art? Oh, nope, it's Jack. Jack-o'-lantern. And then it's just Howie Mandel cheese into the camera like, get it?
Yeah.
Shoulder shrug? And then he attempts to speak French, and he tries to say a term, which is a je ne sais quoi.
Je ne sais quoi.
Je ne sais quoi, meaning that like that certain something that, you know, that you have about something, that certain special quality. And man, does he, I mean, the joke is that he can't say je ne sais quoi. I feel like je ne sais quoi is probably the first thing that anybody who is learning French or anybody who's around it ever learns. Yeah. And it's not hard to say. And so just hearing him butcher it as a part of the joke and then Bobby saying like, oh, you should go, like, you should go to the doctors and have that checked out. And it's just kind of like, oh, okay. All right. Deep breath. I will say to you though, the art of the low budget in this is anime rules apply. Same thing like if you're ever watching a Dragon Ball Z where it's the back of somebody's head and then the other character reacting and the person in the foreground, like their head moving a little bit, but you don't actually see their lips. They even do it when we talked about pacing every once in a while. And I guess this could be to your point about syndication for editing purposes. They'll pan over a static background and narrate over top of that so that you see the visual of like the house being destroyed or something happening, but you hear the mom's voice over top of it. Mm-hmm. They'll also get to the point again where they'll show sort of like a television that Bobby, Derek, and Uncle Ted are all sleeping in front of that has static on it. And they'll take two keyframes for the static and they'll just move it back and forth. In that instance, that flip looks natural. It's what we expect for static on a television, not for like three people sleeping on a couch. But then what they'll do is they'll narrate over top of the static to save on having to actually have the animators go in and adjust and like lips to sync up with everything. Right. So that was definitely really prevalent and super, super frustrating to watch every once in a while. Cause you know why they're doing it. Like, you know why they're doing it. An animator was like, I don't know that you have this budgeted. Like, we can only do so many, Tony, we can only do so many mouth flaps in a day. And they're like, yeah, you're right. No worries.
Having now experienced producing animation that you and Dave just went through the process for Iron Face. I mean, you get that now that, I mean, it's a few seconds just because a joke didn't land. You're not sending that back to the animator if you can avoid it. Because the cost difference is substantial to swap that out. And so it makes you wonder, like, how committed are they to making the jokes work? And it felt like this was one of those things that it was sort of victim to the fact that it's a kid's show. And there's always that perspective of, you know, we don't really need to spend money and push this real hard because it's just a kid's show. You know, it's for kids who aren't going to be able to appreciate the nuance and the improvement and the quality. But now as adults going back and watching it, it's like, screw you guys. I see the problems. I see where this fell off the rails.
And that's always the challenge with this, is that looking at it with that critical adult lens, you think, okay. Anything else I think that didn't hit for you that you would put in the bad category?
I will put the dad character, which is really, it's just Howie Mandel being himself. But not even being himself on a level of like entertainment. Like, I feel like the Uncle Ted is closer to the personality of what Howie Mandel projects for some of his stage persona, more so than the dad character. But the dad is Howie Mandel. It's drawn to look like him. It's voiced, you know, plainly like him. But he's just so incredibly bland. And it's not played up for effect like it would be in, say, Rick and Morty, where you're just making fun of the dad being, you know, boring as crap. But it's just bland and doesn't it's like he's another character that just has to be there and they didn't want to write anything about him. So it makes me wonder, going back to the psychology of this is all Howie Mandel's life, what's his relationship with his dad like?
Yeah, there's a lot of things looking at this cartoon where you think to yourself, ooh, man, like we... Maybe when they were doing some of the writer room's pitches, they should have asked one or two more questions to go a little bit further down the rabbit hole of like, why is that kid always getting grounded? And why do you do all your pitches in this weird voice? And why are you constantly eating cake in the VO booth? Like, this doesn't make any sense. You can just like do the voice.
You're trying to choke again.
Man. Just
Howie, are you okay? Are you
not
okay?
Gonna have another great idea? Like, you're already successful, man. Just chill. Anything else for you before we move over and do our LOLs?
No, I think I'm good on the bad side. Again, this was not one of those things that was my favorite cartoon. There were bits and pieces that I loved about it, but on the whole, it's a It's a rough one, and definitely in parts.
Well, hold your review, buddy. Like,
I'm just saying.
Okay.
Just saying.
We got LOLs. We got LOLs to turn you around.
I will
we got
bite
LOLs
my tongue.
To lift you up, Tony, and get you excited about this cartoon again.
Bring it on.
So, what did you find funny, intentionally or unintentionally, about Bobby's World, about this episode?
We talked a little bit about the sister's accent. That's definitely one. Even within the accent that she was doing, it would drift at times. The whole sequence where she's talking on the phone to her friend and saying, I don't know, watch that movie or something. Like, it changes inflections, and it just drifts within regions of the country. It felt so unfocused comparatively. And she has a lot of lines in this episode. Like, she's a pretty consistent part, because the brother disappears, the parents disappear. It's really just Bobby, Uncle Ted, and Kelly hanging out. And so it's you get a lot of her, which just gave me a great sample of all these horrible, horrible inflections that she had. And then I think beyond that, it's just who in their right mind would leave their child with Uncle Ted? Like, that.
I mean, you know, I get it. You know, he's such a lovable character in terms of what's there. It's like, I have to wonder, and this was something that made me laugh, as Uncle Ted is building this, you know, this haunted mansion inside of their house, in terms of what's there. There's a moment where a bully comes out onto the porch and asks to come in, and Bobby's like, no. And the kid walks away, and a floorboard snaps up and hits him in the back. He walks to the opposite side. Same thing, same effect happens on the opposite side as well. And Bobby's reaction to this just made me laugh for, like, this was unintentional, I'm assuming, on their part, because he's just like, wow, like, Uncle Ted's really going to town with everything he's doing here. And I'm like, what is he doing where he had to disassemble the porch? He's only bringing in corrugated cardboard, Bobby. Like, get with the program, buddy.
It was a pretty solid, and that, like, you're actually underselling the board thing, because it smacks him in the back of the head while he's standing in front of the door. He turns around like he's going to go fight the person that just hit him upside the head. And then he walks to the under end of the board, and it snaps up and knocks him in the back of the head, knocks him off the porch. Like, that's, yeah.
But it's concussed.
It was very much, there is a underlying, I can tell that the set of writers for this show were fans of the Smothers Brothers, and of the Marx Brothers, and Three Stooges, and that sort of thing. Because there's a lot of those kinds of bits. I mean, literally down to was it at the end of this one with the nose and eye and glasses,
yes,
mask thing,
Groucho Marx.
Yeah, they totally just. I mean, it's strictly a Groucho Marx joke that they just repackaged for this. So there's a lot of that kind of stuff, but that one was, I feel like that was intentional, but that was like a writer that managed to slip that one in past the people that are like, oh, kids aren't going to get this.
You know, I'll even say for like my probably one of my last LOLs on this, because there's like silly little chuckles like throughout. But something that struck me as being really fun, and I just kind of like my, maybe not necessarily an LOL, but my jaw definitely kind of dropped, is that when Bobby at the end of this gets transported into his own late night talk show, there's a moment where the desk and the set and like his coffee cup and the coffee coming into the cup and the pen and him sitting there and all of it together. Obviously this joke and this reference wouldn't have landed in 1990, but looking at it now, I thought, oh my God, this is the first Eric Andre show. I laughed so hard at the assembly of this talk show set.
Yeah.
Because I thought to myself, oh no, like, it's Bobby and he's living in this hell and he's just trying to get out. Like, this is incredible. It really made me laugh. Plus it was very cheeky and very silly.
Yeah.
The way that, you know, a 4-year-old would rib their older brother and like, does mom know that you did this? And that's the whole joke, just packaged 4 or 5 times over and over again, where every single punchline is Bobby looking at the camera and just doing the eyebrows where he's cheesing really hard. It was just goofy.
It was very much a Letterman / Conan impression, down to the static image at the end made me think of all those early Conan show things where it was the animated Conan,
the little drawing character that they had of him. Yeah,
because it was a, it's weird to do, but they did in Bobby's, it was Bobby but drawn in a different style, for like just as a still title card, and it made me think so much of old Conan episodes, mm-hmm. which I loved finding out later on that he's the one that draws those little pictures of himself for all that. So it's perfect.
I feel like this was something that maybe Howie Mandel drew himself, or what he imagined that Bobby would have drawn for himself if he had known that he was going
to
be a Static.
It was actually his cover image from the pitch document when he was originally trying to get the show picked up. I don't know this.
Wow.
You
said it. It's canon now.
I got to reach out to Jim and find out if that's right. Jim can tell me, hey, where did that image come from? Season 3 episode, whatever.
I think those were probably like the things that I found that were like intriguing or funny. There was a moment where they bring Bobby into a monster's dinner table, and the universal monsters are just like, pass the Bobby. And for some reason that made me just go, I don't know why. It was just goofy. Like it was goofy, wholesome kids humor that wasn't offensive. Like I didn't have any trouble or any problems with it. You see it and you just kind of go, okay.
Yeah.
Anything else for you?
I think that's it for me. These were a fun couple episodes to jump back into. I did this one and the Tooth Fairy one. And it was a nice little walk down memory lane of just, you know, what this show could do. I did like trying to pick out some of the voice actors for some of them, 'cause there are some that I recognize. I mean, I looked down the list after the fact. I saw Frank Welker on there, Rob Paulsen on there. You know, there's some names that have been in the industry for a good long while, that pepper in across the length of the show. But it was fun.
Yeah. All right. Well, here, let's get into our final assessment.
Okay.
And Tony, you've been on the show enough before to know how we're going to break this down. But for anybody who's new to this, we can recommend a cartoon and we can say, you should watch this. It's a good use of your time. And we can tell you to check it out. Or we can say we don't recommend a cartoon, and we can give you our assessment, our honest, no holds bar assessment, because you know what? We didn't get any Howie Mandel money to be able to do this review.
I love that you just took a step on that name because you were very concerned about going generic.
I am so concerned Howie about Mandel. This. I'm so in my head about this whole idea, Tony. You have no idea at this point. So we're going to say, if we don't recommend this, we might also give you a cartoon that we think you should check out in instead. You know, if we don't like a cartoon, we can go one step further and we can give this the Who Framed Roger. We can give this the Who Framed Roger Rabbit style dip. Yes, the dip from the movie where we dunk a cartoon and we erase it from the annals of cartoon history, never to be talked about on the show unless it's in ridicule ever again. So Tony,
I think we've talked about plenty of dipped shows in the past.
Yeah, you've talked to you. I feel like
my episodes are just callbacks to previous episodes.
Your episodes are your episodes. If we're getting into it, your episode and your review of Neon Genesis Evangelion still has a place. It still takes up rent in my head every once in a while where I'm like, that son of a gun. But it's fine. Because
I get opinions.
It doesn't matter. Because we're talking about Bobby. So for tonight, how are you feeling about Bobby's World, Tony?
So I think from a nostalgia factor, oddly enough, despite how I was kind of digging at it earlier and you were saying, no, hold this till the end. I think I'm going to give it a recommend. I think it's a recommend from a standpoint of at least understanding this era. Very much like, I don't think that the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air was the best comedy of this era, but I think it is extremely indicative of it. And so if you wanted to kind of dig in and see what was, you know, common, right, what was standard at this point in time, I think it's a good indicator of that. It feels very, very 90s. And in a way that brought back a lot of nostalgic points. I don't think you're going into it to be like, I'm going to enjoy every episode here, but I think you will be able to walk away with a few little tidbits like, oh yeah, that was fun. That was great. That was random. An added bonus is that at least as of right now, I think the entire series is on YouTube for free. So this is one of the most, out of all the things that, that I've watched for this show, we've gone to some great lengths in the past to get a hold of some of these episodes to see, and to be able to just go to YouTube, type in whatever episode you want and have it pop up. And it's not like a flipped image or, you know, cropped in a weird way or something that right. It's just a standard episode. It's easy to watch. The sound quality is good. It was nice. And so I think from that perspective, you're going to be able to find this series. You're going to be able to watch it relatively easily. I would give it a recommend.
I'm with you as well. This is a yes. This is something that's very nostalgic for me. I think it is that weird time capsule of the 90s, of what a cartoon was during that time and sort of what you would have watched on a Saturday morning. And for me, this is, you know, this is a pretty perfect distillation of comedy that doesn't work, jank animation that is laughable and silly, but you have the strength of these characters, this Uncle Ted and these Bobby characters and some of the supporting cast that are in here, that really kind of bring this home and make this so fun and accessible for anybody that watches. So
yeah,
I definitely recommend checking this out. Check out Bobby's World. And I'm sure probably Howie Mandel is like, yeah, please watch it. Cause that YouTube channel, I own it and I'm getting money for every click, for every view on it.
It's that and America's Got Talent. He's getting his dollars in.
That Mandel money. You got to take it. Yeah. Got to take it when you can. So that is it for Bobby's World. So thank you, Tony, so much for coming on.
Thank you for finally putting this one together. This was a long time in the making.
Absolutely. Glad that we could do it. I'm glad that we had a chance to kind of get into this. And it's very funny that we watched a Halloween episode. It was probably the least spooky Halloween episode that we could have probably ever done.
There are so many. I mean, I feel like at some point this show may even need to do just the Treehouse of Horror. Its own standalone thing for a Halloween episode, because that's a series that I could binge the entire thing straight through and enjoy.
Oh yeah, I just thinking about that now. I'm like, I want to go upstairs when we're done and start just pull up Disney Plus and just get into it. So it's
get to it.
Yeah, I will. I probably will.
So, glad I could give you that recommendation.
Yes. Well, thank you. Thank you. Because Treehouse of Horror is a perfect show. Speaking of something that is perfect, you heard him on this episode, our friend Bobby Anthem. He is a perfect human being. You can hear him on his paranormal podcast, Inhuman Experience, along with his co-host Bobby Blades. You can find them on Twitter at IEXB_podcast. Bobby also has a solo show that's in the same stream, In Search of My Lost Soul. Not my lost soul like Sean's lost soul, but Bobby's lost soul. Which, it's available alongside of that podcast. You can find them anywhere that you listen to podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher. Check them out. Definitely a show that's worth listening to. And thank you, as always, Bobby. Tony, what do you have going on, buddy?
So we just competed in an activity that you have been a part of for my team many years in the past, the 72-Hour Film Festival. And we completed a short film called Ace of Hearts. And so that is now up on my Vimeo page. If you go to vimeo.com/crowded elevator, you can find that. You can also find a number of short films that Sean plays at least ancillary characters, if not stars in, including Fair Trade, which was one of his main starring roles that won him a best costume, since we're in the Halloween time frame. I think it's worth calling out. Definitely worth picking up. He's got a couple good ones in that one. The one at the end is still my favorite. Not going to ruin it for you. Go watch it. Fair Trade. That's the one to check out.
It's just me running, isn't it?
It is. It's also the mirror shot. That's still hysterical. Just the sublime smile. Check it out. You'll see what we mean.
God. Well, Dave was not on this episode, but we should let you know that you can go over today, I think, is the last and final day of the Iron Face Kickstarter. Everybody who has gone out and checked it out has been so phenomenal. Tony, you did some work to help us with this as well. That's why Crowded Elevator is at the end of it. Please go check out Iron Face. I think we're close to one of our final stretch goals that we have. So definitely go check it out. Yeah. Thank you, everybody.
Yeah.
Looking forward to getting this up and running and have an Iron Face comic sometime next year. As always, you can check out Dave on Collider.com, where he is an editor. You can check him out because he's now Twitch affiliated and streaming video games. Go check him. Go check him out. It's Dr. Claw MD, because that's exactly what his Twitter is too. Dr. Claw MD. Dave's not on the show right now, but I will tell you, if you are listening and you follow Dave starting forward, moving from this point forward, he will follow you back.
And I have to toss this in for Bobby's World that I completely forgot because Dave wasn't here for it. In the Tooth Fairy episode that I watched, I swear it's the same voice actor that does the voice of Dr. Claw gets a cameo voice in there. and it came on and I was like, oh, I'm going to talk to Dave about this. And unfortunately, he's not here for this one, so I didn't get to do it. But yes, the Dr. Claw MD even has a tie into the show we talked about today.
Oh, man. Well, you can also check out Dr. Claw being Dave. Yes. And The Science of Breaking Bad from MIT Press. It is available on Amazon.com. As for me, I do live improv comedy with Washington, D.C. with a group that's called Nox. That's N-O-X exclamation point. You can find tickets and times witdc.org. You might be thinking to yourself, Sean, we're in a pandemic. How the heck are we going to watch this? Well, we stream shows live to the comfort of your own home. So you can watch us on your phone, your tablet, watch us in the bathtub, wherever you want to relax. Guess what? It's you time. Yep. Enjoy it. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Sean Paul Ellis. I am desperately always trying to get off Twitter and Instagram at this point in the year. It's fine. You can also check out my completely improvised comedy podcast that is called The Bureau. If you've ever listened to Teacher's Lounge on Earwolf Productions and you thought to yourself, what if four goofballs got together and did an improvised comedy podcast that answers the question, what if four people who all work for the Federal Bureau of Investigation sound like on a podcast recording at work? Well, The Bureau answers that question. I do it with Jamal Newman and Isabel Galbraith, who have all been on this program, as well as also our friend Jesse Chimes and a bunch of other friends. So you can check it out, The Bureau, anywhere that you listen to podcasts. Want to support this show? You're way too nice. Go over to our Iron Face Kickstarter. Kickstart that. Kick it. You can also go over to our Patreon, and you can find us on Saturday Morning Cartoons. Remember, that's Morning with You. You can also just tell a friend. You know why? Because we don't understand how the Apple iTunes algorithm works, and recommendations probably don't mean crap. So just tell a friend that you enjoy this show. Probably works better, or just scream into a bottle like I do. Check us out, and you can slide into our DMs on Twitter at Morning Tunes. Just remember, Morning with You. Check us out on Instagram, Facebook, Saturday Morning Cartoons. Drop us an old-fashioned email, SaturdayMorningCartoons@gmail.com. You can find all of these links in the link tree, which is in the bio for all of our social media sites. And as always, you can listen to us on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, anywhere fine podcasts are sold. That's the end of it, Tony. Thank you so much, buddy, for coming on and doing this.
I'm impressed with that whole ending. The quick run of all the sources for finding the show is impressive. I'm sincerely in awe.
Tony, you don't do this for 300 episodes with a standard script that you're reading off of half the time. Oh, that's, gang, we just pulled back the curtain. So happy Halloween, everybody. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll be back next week.
Hey, everybody. Thanks a lot for listening to Saturday Morning Cartoons. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have to transform and roll out.